G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Adam White, I'm sure, is looking forward to the weekend because there's a whole lot of sport to be consumed and he'll be enjoying every moment of that. Whitey, good morning.
Hey, good morning. It feels like about 7 months ago that we had AFL football. This feels like an eternity because we were getting used to it every night.
Are you serious?
I don't know whether you feel the same way. Yeah, I do. I feel like it's been ages since there's been a game.
You've been conditioned. No.
Yeah.
How are you going to go? Perhaps in five years' time, maybe to be, when there's like a cycle of Friday night through Sunday, and that's the cycle, that's the world. And you've got all those days in between to fill.
I know. It'll spin me out. I'm not sure. No, very exciting day today. You might feel the energy coming through the through your headphones.
What's
because,
happening?
Well, it's Campbell's birthday today. Now, that's
late.
So that's a big day for him. But the best part about today is that he can choose the entire meal planned for the day. Breakfast, lunch and dinner.
The whole plan?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
We've gone a bit... Usually it's just the one meal, maybe two, but because of the COVID situation and the subsequent protocols, he can't have any friends over. He can't even have his grandparents over for his birthday, so we're trying to be a bit more special. So three meals. Now, that really plays into my wheelhouse,
this is why you've done this. This is not for Campbell.
Yeah.
This is not for Campbell.
No, this is... No, Emma came up with these protocols. So I know what he's choosing today, and it is fantastic. If it was his brother, I'd be a little bit concerned. He'd get alternative stuff like Chinese for dinner and sushi stuff for lunch. So we're getting real sort of pancakes, party pies and sausage rolls, pizza. That's what we're dealing with today. So it's an exciting day.
How's that going with our machine?
No, it's not going very well. I've determined... Well, it's like, seriously, my weight situation is like the coronavirus numbers. It's plateauing.
Well, I need to bring in Rama. Adam Ramanauskas is a Bombers Premiership hero. He's also these days the manager to the Stars. He joins us on a Friday and a Monday as well. Rama, good morning.
Very good morning. It's very interesting because we have a birthday week in my house. So yesterday it was my middle son's birthday. On Monday it's my younger son's birthday. And then Wednesday of next week it's my wife's birthday. So we have the week. So funny you should talk about the menu, Whitey, because that's exactly what we did yesterday. So it was bacon and eggs and pancakes for breakfast. It was Subway for lunch. And it was KFC for dinner. All washed down with a massive piece of cake.
Jeez. Fantastic. Who chose that?
That was Lucas. That was Lucas. He chose the menu. But what was?
Can I come and play at Lucas's house when the coronavirus finishes?
What was quite cool though, Harf, is that a couple of his mates sort of dropped past during the day and just dropped off packages at the doorstep for him for his birthday.
Ah.
Chiros was the first one. And the, what was the second one? Ice cream.
Ice cream?
So, yeah.
Nice work. That's a good effort. We like when the ice cream pops past his place for a little bit of a say good day. That's a big win.
So, yes, it was a good day. It's very interesting with a kid in isolation and having a birthday because the conversation was had about homeschooling yesterday. I'm not doing that on my birthday. So he proceeded just to walk around the house for a lot of the day and not do much work. And it was very interesting.
Yeah, so we had that conversation.
Well, we had one of those. Anyway. What did we do? I can't remember what we did. I can't remember. Don't know what I did yesterday.
No.
It was only every 6 days.
This one day rolls into the next half.
Well, I was talking to one of the neighbours yesterday at the front, over the fence, of course, because you can't get too close. Just the Groundhog Day situation. Yeah. How are you going?
Yep.
Same as yesterday. Yeah, good. That's good. Yeah. Pretty much the same here. Yeah.
I love when you talk to somebody on the phone. Or, so what have you been up to lately? Well, what do you mean? What have I been up to?
What do you mean? What have I been up to?
Like, unless you're painting the house or redoing your garden or whatever that is, it's just sort of get to the desk at whatever time and then end up on the couch. Days just roll into the next.
Ah, it's a funny world we live in. It's a funny world. So no couscous tonight, Whitey?
I wouldn't have thought so.
I did notice that Chinese was exotic and Japanese was exotic a second ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it is. That's okay. That's... Hey?
How is Chinese exotic?
Well, I wouldn't call it normal for us. Like it's not on the regular sort of fare, so, you know.
It is a very mainstream takeaway.
Couldn't be more mainstream. In fact, it's probably the most of mainstream.
I wouldn't describe it as mainstream. I wouldn't have thought so. I think what Rama had last night, that's mainstream. But that's okay. Good morning to John on the SMS. John always enjoys it when we talk about family-based activities. So good morning, John. I hope you're going well.
Morning, John. Having a great day.
Anyway, let's move on. Let's move on. Do you think it's been a long time since there's been a game of football?
I've enjoyed a couple of days off, to be honest with you, Whitey.
Yeah, I'm not saying I haven't enjoyed the days off, but it does feel like a long time ago there's been a game.
Well, it's been nice that we've been able to take a breath. Obviously, with Sir Doug Nicholls' round coming up, there's been some attention put towards that, which is obviously very, very important to see. The Indigenous jumpers get some real airtime over the last couple of days and the designs and what they mean to people. I think it's been good. It's been a different side of football rather than just, you know, game after game after game. So this, you know, this round now, what interests me, Half and Whitey, is because players have been coming off 4 or 5 day breaks, most now have had sort of a 6 or 7 day break. I wonder what that does to the football for this round. Are players just simply too sore? Are we going to see the magnitude of changes that we've seen over the previous few rounds, you know, with 5, 6 changes, some games for some teams? Or do we now start seeing teams really lock in for the remainder of the season? I know we're compressing again in 2 rounds' time, but do we see teams really start locking in and really... focusing in towards those finals?
It's a good question, I reckon. See how they play it. And I wonder if there is... We were going through the injury ladder yesterday, Rama.
Yeah.
It was in the paper, which was interesting in itself. I wonder if there is a different physical response after being conditioned through this last 6 weeks or so of constantly being on the go and having that little breather, and what that does to the body, if there's a different physical response from the athletes. I'm interested to see how that rolls, I reckon.
I think you condition yourself mentally just to play, and I think that's what clubs have to do with players. Look, guys, we're going to be coming off short breaks here. You've just got to mentally prepare yourself. Physically, you'll be okay. And that's the psychology of high-performance staff, you know, telling them that the work they did through a pre-season has been more than enough. Their, you know, all their numbers, all their baseline numbers about their wellness and how they're feeling is really high because they do all that wellness testing every morning when they wake up. So the psychology of that, that's where I think a lot of people just see a fitness coach, strength and conditioning coaches as just get the guys fit. But there's a lot of psychology that goes into it for those guys.
No doubt about that. No doubt about it. And, of course, we'll go through all that round 13 action after 8 o'clock with Brent Harvey because the Daniel Gorringe Cup tonight is a very important way to kick off round 13 of the AFL. He's getting some mileage, too, out of it. He's enjoying his work at the moment, Dan. Funny stuff from him.
He's in the window. He's in the window for... relevance off the back of Big Brother. It'll last a while.
Yes,
a little while. There's a couple of things I'd like to talk about because we can talk football more later on because there's a couple of really interesting stories that have obviously happened in the last 24 hours. But in the world of golf, I think it's worth mentioning that we've reached the playoffs when it comes to the PGA Tour. So, obviously, it's been very much a truncated season because of what's gone on. But it's worth mentioning that Cameron Davis, the Australian, the former Australian Open winner and young player, he is in second spot, 6 under through just 11 holes. So that is quite an achievement from Cameron Davis, who's playing in the afternoon. So a lot of players have finished their rounds. So usually you get better scores in the morning because, of course, Daniel, you're playing in what conditions?
Benign.
Correct. Cameron in the afternoon, so 6 under through 11. That is definitely worth mentioning. And the Premier League fixtures have come out. And it is starting in September. I think it's the 12th of September, that weekend. Yeah, it is, 12th of September. So there's only two more weeks or three more weeks until we're back playing Premier League again to try and get the season somewhat back on schedule. So, yeah, there you go. Just thought I would throw those in.
I was looking at the leaderboard for the Northern Trust Open, and interesting, talking about the morning sessions and the afternoon tea times. Look, there's a fair few afternoon players going beautifully at the moment. Tommy Fleetwood's 6 under through 11 as well. Kevin Streelman 6 under through 12. And Daniel Burton, sorry, Robbie Shelton 5 under through 16. Bubba Watson 5 under through 15. Sebastian Munoz is 5 under through 15 as well. Sorry, through 13. He was 7 under through 7. It was a really positive start from our man Sebastian. So maybe there are some benign conditions in the afternoon over there at wherever that's being played, the Northern Trust. Where's MA? Is that Massachusetts?
I think so.
You know, sometimes it's not windy in the afternoon.
Well, that's what I'm suggesting, Rambo. The conditions,
likely.
In fact...
It's less.
That's why I said sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah. They're playing. It is in Massachusetts. It's at TPC Boston. So, yeah.
By the way, while we're talking golf, the Women's Open is on at Royal Troon. You got to see it like that, I think.
Yes.
Royal Troon.
Good, Daniel. That's excellent. That's very good.
That's going on the first round of that. Currently
just
away.
Give one more time. One more time.
Royal Troon. I think you're something like that. I think so. Amy Olsen has rocketed to the leaderboard by 3 shots. She's a US player, 4 under, and leads all comers by 3, so it's a nice little buffer. Must have been difficult considering the scoring over there at the moment. Sophie Popov, Alexander's sister, and Marina Alex are 1 under. Everyone else is even or worse for the Aussies. Catherine Kirk is 1 over with Lydia Ko from New Zealand perspective. Stephanie Kiriakou is 2 over. Minji Lee is 3 over, and Sarah Kemp and Hannah Green are 4 over at the moment for the Aussies. So they're the ones sort of around about the mark. Suo, 5 over at the moment. And somebody else I saw before, Gabby Ruffles, who we spoke to a couple of weeks ago. The amateur has got a gig at the Women's Open. She's 8 over the first day's play. So a tough day there at Royal Troon for the Women's Open.
Yeah, it was very, very windy. It was very, very windy, and quite a few of the women just couldn't cope with the conditions. I think it actually was worse early. So maybe Rama was right that it didn't get as windy in the afternoon. That's rare, though.
Sometimes it doesn't get windy in the afternoon, you know. Sometimes it doesn't. What made headlines for you yesterday? Why are you talking about news in the last 24 hours? What caught your eye?
Well, I was interested with Rama. The news with Cam McCarthy being out and not playing, and not playing ever again for Fremantle because he's quit the club after being told that he wouldn't get a contract next year. So how many times does that happen, though, where a club actually tells a player before the end of the season that he wouldn't be getting a contract the following year? I would have thought that's quite rare.
Well, because you're having ongoing conversations with list managers, you do get a feel sometimes reasonably early what's going to happen with a with a player. Now, at this stage, not a lot of list managers are saying what's happening with players because of potential reductions in list sizes and the like, which we've discussed over many, many weeks now here. The McCarthy one's an interesting one because what I was reading this morning, he's just simply said, well, if you're not going to give me a contract, I'm not playing anymore. So is that's either a suggestion that his management have gone out and already found him another home potentially at another club for next year, and the club's saying, yep, we'll take him, or he just simply doesn't want to play football in 2021.
Do we know what is more likely, Remo, whether or not there's another gig lined up, or it's the latter and he's just had a gutful and he's out?
I got no idea, unfortunately, on that one half, but I think they would be the two options.
Yeah, okay. I must admit I was in a similar boat. Why would you do that? Because I imagine, and if you just strip it back to purely what he gets out of it or doesn't get out of it, he wouldn't. If he walks out, there'd be no more cash coming his way, would there?
Well, no, not necessarily. Usually they would pay out his contract. That's how it would work. It would be termination by mutual agreement, I imagine. So they'd pay out the remainder of his contract and go from there.
Right. Right.
It struck me, without knowing the situation particularly well, it's almost like, well, if you're not going to play me next year, I don't even know whether I want to play next year, but I'm sick of this bubble life. I'm just going to live my life. I mean, obviously in Perth, you can kind of live your life normally. I just need a break, get out of this, you know, heavily protocoled situation. I can't imagine Cam would like a protocol situation.
His protocol's been pretty good the last little while, hasn't it? Over in Perth?
No, but just in general. I mean, I don't think any of the players would choose the life that they have to leave at the moment. And I'm not saying it's tough on people, because I still find it quite extraordinary that the way some of them have reacted to living in 5-star hotels and all that sort of thing, considering what so many people in Victoria are having to live life at the moment. But there will be some that will find that difficult, particularly in other states, where if you get outside that AFL bubble, you can live your life quite normally. So I'm not sure. I mean, the other one was the situation with the two Port Adelaide players, Laddams and Houston, who both are very important to Port Adelaide at the moment. I mean, fortunately for them, they've only got short suspensions, 2 weeks and 3 weeks. But, gee, the Kenny Hinckley would be furious about that.
Well, if you listen to Chris Davies' statement yesterday, him talking about both players, particularly Laddams, they're really disappointed, Port Adelaide, with that, because, again, it's a blatant breach of the rules.
A late-night house party can't be too big an issue, wouldn't have thought, these days. You're allowed to do that sort of stuff. Let's have a listen to Chris Davies from The Power yesterday, talking about the incidents or the situation with Dan Houston and Peter Laddams and the outcomes.
I understand the difference in penalties. Dan should know better. Pete Laddams is in a situation where he's just got into the team. If he wants to have a professional career as a footballer, he'll need to act in a far better manner than he has right now, as will Dan, specifically at this footy club.
Now, that had Ken Hinckley written all over it, the last line.
Yep. Yeah. So, again, like the players, they know the rules. And I say this to all my guys, the rules that you need to follow are black and white. Don't put yourself into any compromising situation where you may be in breach of them. You just got to be extremely careful.
Yeah. So 3 weeks for Laddams, 2 weeks for Houston.
Plus a fine for Port Adelaide.
Plus the $25,000 after the
other issue, just quickly on that, Whitey, the issue with the fine, it goes into next year's soft cap.
Yep.
Now, is that fair?
Why?
Well, I mean, Sydney have had a big fine, obviously, with what's happened there as well. I would have thought that may mean that they can't get an assistant coach next year, or they can't get a development coach. That's a that's a big price to pay. Not only on the club. I think if it's just a financial fine, well, I think you know that's still going to hurt the club. But I don't think it's necessarily fair on a coach that might not have a job next year as a result of a penalty on a player. I don't think
that's what we find ourselves
fair.
In, Whitey, that we can't have these protocol breaches. Might tip the whole thing over. Right, so there's got to be some sanctions or ramifications on the back of that. If that means you've got to pay a $25,000 fine, which might affect an assistant coach or whatever, that's on the players, mate. This is the precarious situation
that
the whole thing is at the moment. And this is why they need to understand the ramifications for their actions.
No, absolutely. I understand that. And I think the fines are appropriate under the circumstances because of, as you said, the risk it could have to the entire competition. But I think actually making it come out of the soft cap next year, I think is harsh because it potentially means that there are other people that it affects from having a job or not that might not have anything to do with the sanction or the actual incident, which would be the case with the two Port Adelaide players have a house party and all of a sudden there's an assistant coach that doesn't have a job next year. I think that's particularly fair.
If they really need another coach, they'll find a way to cut 25 out of something else. But it's the old chestnut. If you want to be part of the team, one member does something wrong, we all pay the price. It's the old meet at 6 o'clock in the morning at Port Phillip Bay, Rammer, after someone transgresses.
The individual versus the collective. So, you know, that makes the fine even worse when it hurts the collective.
Let's get to Johnny on the road, who's given us a call on 1300 652 927. Hello, John.
How are you?
Going all right, mate. How you going?
Is the big fella going to... A few questions before you answer it. The big fella, is he playing? Because it's about time. I'm starting to get sick of, you know, talking about Danaher here.
Oh, righto. That's important information.
Conor McQuarrie is a backman. What I've seen him do last week, trying to muck around playing that Irish game, mate, you're playing Aussie rules. You go and kick the damn goal, mate. I would have dragged him. Pity there's no runners anymore. I'm really getting frustrated with this Essendon side, mate. They're starting to make me sick. And as lucky there's no local footy. Otherwise, that's where I'd be.
Rammer, a bit of feedback for your boys from Johnny.
Yes.
Firstly, Big Joe. Big Joe. There's been a lot of talk about Big Joe and him coming back. What's the situation?
I think he's extremely close.
Does that mean he's going to play?
I don't know. I honestly don't know if he's going to play or not. But if it's not this week, I imagine it's probably next week. So he's pretty close with his body. Essendon have mentioned that a number of times. John Wurzfeld's mentioned that a number of times. But I saw footage last night of him training, and he looked absolutely sensational with his movement. So I think more importantly for Joe and the mental side of it, it'll be just terrific to see him back out there. Whether it's seniors or in the scratch match, who knows? Then Conor McKenna, I said my piece on Conor on Monday.
You did?
I love him. I love him across halfback, and I've always loved him across halfback. It's him and Adam Sard are two of Essendon's great strengths as defenders. I'd love to see him, and I want to see him back there on Saturday night against the Tigers.
So no scrimmage match for Joe Danaher. You think he'll just go straight in, whether it's this week or next week?
Well, we're sort of getting to that stage, aren't we, Whitey? If we were 4 weeks earlier, you probably could have played him in a few scrimmage matches. But because we're getting so close to the end of the season now, it might be a case of him straight back in.
Yeah. Interesting. That smacks of desperation to me.
I wouldn't have thought with a guy like Joe Danaher, who's had the challenges he's had, that you would ever contemplate thinking about putting him into an AFL game straight up.
Couldn't agree with you more.
100% agree.
I'd love to see him play two or three games in, you know, at that scratch match level, to just to give himself some real confidence mentally that all the work that he's done over 18 months now basically has worked.
Goodness me.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I tell you now, I've said this a couple of times this week. There is unrest in the Essendon supporter community. They've just had enough. And I'm really quite surprised just how much they've had enough. Now, I know it's been, you know, 2004 or whatever it was since they won a final and all these sorts of things, but it's quite strong, the frustration, and they're not copping it about the injuries, and they're not copping it about a coaching transition. They hate the way they're playing at the moment, the supporters. And the concern from an Essendon perspective is that they're actually going from one coach to another, so the supporters feel like they're seeing what they're going to see in the next couple of years under Ben Rutten, and they're not happy about it. So it's really, really interesting.
Tomorrow, we're at the Valley. We're at Moonee Valley. What are we planning on racing on, Dino? What have you done the form on, just first up?
Oh, pretty wet, Daniel. Looking at how the weather's supposed to pan out, I think it's a... I'm thinking maybe even a heavy track, which we don't get a lot of at the Valley, but certainly got one back in July, and the track was a soft 6 yesterday. So, yeah, I'm thinking 7 to 8 at the minimum.
All right, so keep that in your mind as we're going through this. Let's have a look at race 6, which is the first leg of the Quaddie at the Valley tomorrow, the Mackenzie Stakes for the 3-year-olds. And there's some good form in this race, or horses that have had good form coming into this race. There's a couple of first starters or first uppers today or tomorrow. And there's 9 going around, Dino, at the top of the order. Hard landing for Tom Dabenig and Ben Hayes. I was about to say Hayes Dabenig, but I've got to get out of that habit. With Lukey Nolan in the saddle as favourite at tab.com.au, round about $3.80.
Yeah, he's one of the chances, Daniel. I think this is a really challenging program to start with because we've got the rail out 5 metres, the likelihood of a wet track, and as we spoke of last week, the horses that are on their way towards something maybe bigger over the carnival kicking off. And there's a couple that I'm a bit of a rap for in this race. But I think the horse that I like the way he's going off the jump outs is number 2, Rathlin. He's had one go on a wet track and he failed, and that was in the Golden Slipper. But he was ridden back in the field and really had no chance that day. But from a good draw here, with the recent jump out under his belt, I think he'll run well. 6 El Borado will handle the wet no problem. He's had a little jump out after a freshen up. He can run well. Flying Award could win a feature race this spring. He could be a Corfield Guineas horse, maybe. He's a son of Seamus Award, and he's in the same colours. He's a very nice horse coming up, and I think his recent jump out was good. Hard Landing's got the race fitness. He's worth including. And even the Last Charge has had 2 recent jump outs. He's got former round horse called Ranting, who ran very well last week. And for that reason, I'd put him in the mix as well. But I'm leaning to Rathlin. But for a small field, I think it's probably the most open leg of the quaddie.
All right, that's interesting. First up, Quinny, and maybe a soft track and the rail out and all that sort of stuff. 9 in the field, and Dino's gone 5 early doors, which suggests the market might be pretty open.
Yeah, it is open. Hard Landing's been the best back runner. Was $4, then backed into $3.80, got back out to $4, and has subsequently firmed from $4 into $3.80. Flying Award, a $4.20 second leg. Rathlin's been a little bit soft, $4.80 out to $5. And there's been a little bit of money for 2 of the runners at longer odds. Pioneer River, a $12 chance, and Tanker at $16.
Right, have you got any information there that you can tell us about what's happening in that race? Quinn, you got any tips for us there?
Yeah, I thought that Pioneer River had run a cheeky race first up at double figure odds. So we'll see how we go, Daniel.
There we go. Nice little work there from Quinny. Let's get on to the second leg of the Quaddie. It is the over the 1,200 metres, benchmark 90 affair. The Four Pines Refreshing Ale Handicap. In fact, before we do that, Rammer, can you just give us the numbers out of that leg?
Yes, 2, 6, 4, 1, and 7.
2, 6, 4, 1, and 7, the first leg of the Quaddie. So the second leg, as I said, over the 1,200 metres, a full field of 12 going around at this stage, Dino. We'll see what happens come race day with the track, but we don't go too far down the order. In fact, number 7, Windstorm, is favourite at tab.com.au. One of those famous pink colours with the white crosses across the top. Willie Pike in the saddle for the Williams team. Even money, Dino, at tab.com.au.
Yeah, he's going to be hard to beat, Daniel. I've just changed my background for you too, by the way.
Stalwart activity.
Yes, indeed. Windstorm, look, he's a very smart horse. The thing about these Bob Peters, Grand Alana Williams trained horses and William Pike ridden is they all like to get back balance and run home. Whether that'll be the pattern rail out 5 at Moonee Valley tomorrow, that would be the worry for me. I probably got no doubt that he's the most talented and progressive horse in the race, but that's the little concern for me. I'm tipping him, but with reservations at the price. I think Epic Grey will run really well here. I think first up, Lindsay Smith usually has him ready to go, and he can run a really bold race fresh. Six Banquo ran a terrific race in the Newmarket back in the autumn. That's a good form reference. The wet ground be some query, but he looks to have jumped out very nicely down the straight recently. And Dexalation's got race fitness on his side, the claim for Lockie Neindorf, and he did handle a Valley Winder to win last start. So whilst I think Windstorm's the one to beat, I think the price is a little bit short, and I'll be taking a few in this leg of the quaddie.
All right, that's interesting, Quinny. A little bit prohibitive, though, that even money you're offering up there at the tab for Windstorm.
Yeah, well, he has been the best back runner in the race, 220 into $2, but it will be interesting if it is one of those tracks that does favour the on-pace runners and maybe the heavy ground, he will ease back out. Banquo's been popular early doors as well, $4.60 into $4.20, and there's been a bit of support there continuing for the Oliver O'Brien combination. At double figure odds, there has been money for one of the runners Dino gave a push for there, in Epic Grey, who's been 17 into 16. And Dexalation has been 10 out of 12, but starting to attract some support at that quote. But Windstorm, hopefully for favoured backers, can get the job done at this stage. Clearly the best back runner in the second leg of the quaddie.
How many awesome horses does Bob Peters have, Dino? It seems every horse he's got's a star.
It's much easier to work out which one can't run, Daniel, to be honest. we are seeing his A-team over here, but there is a good squad of them, and this is a very nice horse as well. I would say, he's won five of six. He might be one of the middle of the range horses, but he's still very good in his own right.
All right, so that's even money there for Windstorm. He's in the numbers. Rammer, what are those numbers again, please, for the punters?
7, 4, 6, and 3.
Off the SMS, it's a good question. 7, 4, 6, and 3. Has Rammer ever got Dino's numbers wrong and had to be corrected? He sounds like he feels the pressure.
Absolutely, I feel the pressure. I don't want to get these numbers wrong. I know how many people rely on them.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Plenty of people rely on them. Let's have a look at Race 8, the feature event of the card, the Car Lion Stakes. Tomorrow, a good field of good horses going around, and some, as Dino mentioned before, progressing through to bigger things for the spring, and some in pretty hot form at the moment. It's over the 1,000 metres, a bit of a dash for cash, and there's 10 going around. And speaking of dash for cash, not too many dash better than Brooklyn Hustle. Certainly did on resumption, Dino, and he is favourite at tab.com.au to, I think, $2.80. She is favourite, in fact.
Yes, she is. Daniel, unfortunately, scratching of Alpha Oro, I thought he had a really good chance of measuring up to this race, but we'll have to wait for another day for him. And just with the conditions, I'm going the safe option with Jungle Edge. I know that he'll handle the conditions well. He's run some terrific races at the Moonee Valley 1000, but usually on dry ground, and often he's run in a couple of Moyer Stakes and run really well at Group 1 level. So he's got the conditions to suit, and I think under this weight scale, he's pretty well treated. Brooklyn Hustle will need a good ride like she got last start from Dwayne Dunn, because she lacks early speed and will have to duck and weave through the field. If she gets that, she can win. Bonds Away with a new stable now with Wendy Kelly. Looks to have trialled up pretty well, and he's a good competitor in this grade also. And down from Sydney, Witherspoon for the Chris Lee stable. Very quick mare. I think she'll come across and probably lead with Jungle Edge. Handles the wet and has got a little chance. But I think that got to admire the way Jungle Edge goes on wet ground, and you know that you're going to get a great run for your money with him in these conditions, and for that reason I'm putting him on top.
Fair enough too, I reckon. And Quinny, we know that Jungle Edge is one of the punters' pals and has been for quite some time, particularly when there's some water around on the tracks. Don't tell me you've gone a little bit narrow. Is 420 a bit short, or we're going to get shorter on the day?
Well, it's a very good question, Daniel, and I think we have to only look back to when he won at Caulfield to see it does come down to what happens on race day with the weather. Because if it's a heavy track, he'll start shorter than 4.20, but if it doesn't quite get to that bracket, maybe he is a tad skinny. But Dino's tipping him, so I reckon he's more likely to firm than drift. He's a 4.20 chance. He's been the best back runner in the race. He was as much as $7 on Wednesday. There have been deductions along the way, but that's a good indication that punters are sticking with the popular veteran. Brooklyn Hustle, a $2.80 favourite. Then Great Again, $6.50. Bonds Away, $6.50. Hummer Hummer, she's one that probably won't appreciate the rain, an $8.50 chance. Witherspoon, $11 for $1.17. Ashlaw, $26. The Jungle Edge would be terrific to see him win and then potentially head to Sydney.
All right. So Jungle Edge, the punter's pal, is getting some love there, even though Brooklyn Hustle is favourite at the moment at tab.com.au. Check your local guides for the weather conditions tomorrow. Rama, the numbers, please.
1, 10, 5, and 9.
Let's get to the last leg of the quaddy on the Friday form and see what we can do for our punters. We're three legs in. We've got one to go. It's over the Cox Plate distance of the 2040, the 2040 metres. And I've got full field of 12, some emergencies as well, Dino, waiting to get a start. And down at number 3 for the Team Williams camp, D. Oliver and D. O'Brien getting the horse ready to roll. Order of the Garter out of barrier 12 is favourite. $4.40 at tab.com.au.
Yeah, he's one of the good chances too, Daniel. He's been very sparingly raced in Australia. We saw him recently at Flemington. He ran quite well. I'm going to go with Polly Gray, though. I think she's now had the two runs at 2,000 metres and gets onto a probably preferred ground tomorrow. And I think that'll really suit her. Gets a chance to record her first win for the Waller stable. She's had the four runs for Chris Waller and going very well, but now just needs a win and a really good chance here. I think Shabau from the Rob Hickmont yard, I wouldn't be surprised if we're talking about this horse around Cups time. He's kicking off in this race. It's a race that I think El Mandan used one year on his way to Melbourne Cup Glory. And Shabau only had that little cameo over winter. He can run very well. Three Order of the Garters there with a chance. And El Galil won well last start and is next best. But I think Polly Gray will be hard to beat.
Polly Gray, all right. 650, I think, has just moved up to in the tab.com.au market. Now, that's not favourite. I mentioned Order of the Garter there, Quinny. How much support has Order of the Garter got? DT O'Brien's in hot form at the moment with these staying types.
Yeah, Order of the Garter has been popular, 480 into 440, but Polly Gray's also attracted early support, $7 into 650, and I dare say after that little push from Dino, we may see further support. Shabau, a $6 chance, Young Rascal, 750. There's been money at longer odds for number 7, WT, who's a $12 chance, but a good betting race, and a lot of these runners may go on to do some good things over the spring. And I know Michael Felgate's going to be chained to Chris Waller this morning, so hopefully he can give us a good little push there for Dino's on-top tip in Polly Gray.
All right, that's good business. That is good business. Look forward to hearing from the master trainer, Chris Waller, a little bit later on with Blue Eyes on Racing Pulse. Okay, so that is the quaddie done. Now, Rama, I just had a mate text me. He's just woken up. Always sleeps in on a Friday. He's got to wake up early. We've talked about this. But he would like the numbers again, please, for the quaddie tomorrow at Moonee Valley, if you could.
Okay, race 6, 2, 6, 4, 1, and 7. Race 7, 7, 4, 6, and 3. Race 8, 1, 10, 5, and 9. And then race 9, 6, 9, 3, and 4.
All right, 6, 9, 3, and 4 in the last. So there are your numbers tomorrow for the quaddy at Moonee Valley. Good luck. And, of course, make sure you're listening to the panel tomorrow morning. Might be a few scratchings with a heavy track. And for the latest information with Dino and the crew on RSN 927. Dino, the formula bets is a very, very popular part of the Friday form. If you haven't registered for it, you should do that out there in ListenerLam. RSN.net.au is the place to do that. Who are we playing for today, Dino? And what are we looking at tomorrow at the Valley?
We're playing for Spero Zois of Murrumbina. And for Spero, a $40 win bet, race 2, number 4, Tailleur. $40 the win, race 4, number 8, Kentucky Tornado. And $40 on the all-up of the pair, race 2, number 4, into race 4, number 8. And that's for Spero Zois of Murrumbina.
All right, Spero, good luck to you. Good luck to you. Race 2, number 4, into race 4, number 8. Quinny, what does that come to for Spero?
$7.75 pre-multiplier. The first leg, Tailleur, $1.75. And the second leg, Kentucky Tornado, at $4.40.
All right, $7.75 pre-multiplier. And I heard some news through the week, just on the multiplier, that there was an incident with Adam Ramanauskas, Dino, that there might have been the ever-elusive, the sort of the gold, the pot of rain, pot of gold into the rainbow sort of stuff from Rama on the multiplier. Is that right, Rama?
Yes, that is correct. I got the five timeser.
Quinny, are you okay with that? Is there a glitch? Was there something wrong with the system?
There's a glitch.
Well, I want to hear what happened, though. Did he win a fortune? Because I know last time he got the five timeser, he won, but he went from having his maximum bet to a saver on the horse.
Oh, is that right? Have you got it twice now, Rama?
Yeah, I got it 2 years ago, I think. Yeah, so this is my second five timeser, and it's still to run. So we'll see tomorrow what happens.
He got in early. Well, I'll tell you maybe shortly, because I think it coincides with something else. It might even be the Ramaruffi. We'll see. Dino, what have you got for the Ramaruffi for us this week?
Wouldn't that be appropriate, Daniel, because Rama has got the rough odds, if that's the case. Not so long a price here, but each way odds, because I think it's a really tough meeting. Still want to find a winner. Race 9, number 6, Polly Gray.
Polly Gray, that's all right. 650. Quinny, is that right?
650 there for Polly Gray, the Ramaruffi. So hopefully that can get the job. And I just got a message from Trent Langscale. He keeps note of all the successful five-timeser. He said, was it on Extra Brute in 2018, Rama?
Correct.
Are you serious?
Rama, did you have $20 on it?
No, I did not have $20 on it.
What did you have on it?
$5 each way.
Well, you don't deserve it. You don't deserve it. So, right, so you've backed the Polly Gray as well, the Ramaruffi, before you even knew it was the Ramaruffi. This is interesting.
Yes.
And five times. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Righto. Well, that's a very exciting part of the journey for us this weekend to watch Rama and see how he goes with Polly Gray. Dino's Ramaruffi. 650, 230 each way all day, if you don't mind, for the Ramaruffi this week. And as I said before, I think we said during the break, Dino, when no one was listening, I thought we had the cash last week.
Junipel, yes. Certainly raised a cheer here at about the 250 when he got off the back of showmanship, that's for sure.
Not to be, but that's all right. We've got our place money there at about $5, and the punters were happy as well that listened to the Friday form. And that is it for another week. All our numbers are there for you. They'll be out on the website very shortly, in the Twitter page as well. And make sure, as I mentioned, that you listen to the panel tomorrow morning for all the latest information, the updated selections with track conditions and all on RSN 927. And just a reminder, if you missed it last week, Dino is back pre and post-race on RSN 927 as well, giving all his information and feedback as well. And it's magnificent to have him back doing that for us on the weekends. Dino, great to hear from you. Great to see you as well. We'll look forward to catching up soon.
Thank you, Daniel. Say good day to Hugh for us.
I will say good day to Hugh. Good stuff. Dean Lester, the world's greatest form analyst, with us on the Friday form. Quinny, what have you got for us tomorrow?
It's going to be hard to follow that. I'm still in shock that he's got a five times multiplier on a horse that Dino's tipped on top as well.
So yeah, that hurts my heart.
Very happy times there for Rama. But I was going to tip a horse each way, and Dino's put it in the formula bet in Kentucky Tornado, so I certainly won't be jumping ship, but very confident we'll bounce the ball with a win. Race 1, number 4, coming around tomorrow. Good way to start the multis at the $1.80.
He jumps into packs, he jumps in back, you know, with courage. So for people to sit there and say he lacks courage is completely irresponsible and lacks perspective in my point of view, and they really should have a good hard look at themselves, because I guarantee you, there's a few players out there making comment, mainly I'm looking at David Swartz here. I played a grand final against that bloke, and within 20 minutes of the game, he was crying. So, have a look at himself at some stage.
That is the unmistakable voice of Damien Hardwick, one of your premiership teammates, Rama,
yes.
Played in that game. You played in that game in 2000, and he was talking where seemingly he was of the impression that David Swartz, who he wasn't overly happy with, for his conversations about Tom Lynch in recent times, was in tears 20 minutes in. Can you confirm that that was the case, or is that something that Dim has just made up?
I would believe Dimmer. Anything that Dimmer says, particularly out of the football field, probably. I was too busy chasing around Adam Uzo in the first 20 minutes of that grand final, but I know Dean Wallace and Damien Hardwick and Mark Johnson and Dean Solomon. And then you obviously got Sean Wellman and Dustin Fletcher in that back six. I'd be scared of those guys too if I came up against them.
What did you make of Dimmer's retort there to some of the feedback coming towards his star forward, Tom Lynch?
That's Dimmer's white line fever just coming out. And, you know, Dimmer is ultra protective of his players, and he always has been. So, you know, there was criticism that came Tom's way throughout the week from a lot of people, and he wanted to protect his player. So, you know, he'll take the... I guess all the headlines today to protect Tom. So, you know, that's how Dimmer was as a player, and that's how he is as a coach.
I can see Adam waiting to jump in here.
I just think it's an overreaction to everything. The whole thing's been an overreaction. The Tom Lynch, I said this earlier in the week, I can't believe how much airtime the Tom Lynch tummy tap has had. It happens all the time, but for some reason that got a lot more attention than most. But I think the other thing too is that what we haven't been seeing is this overinflated commentary on one incident over the last few weeks, because there's been a game every night, so we just keep the conversation rolling. We don't get bogged down in minor things. And I just think this Tom Lynch thing has been a minor thing, and it's just fed on itself the whole week.
You know what's interesting here, Harv, is that the media continue to say we want to hear more, you know, more of the human side, more comment from players, more comment from coaches that are, you know, not the, you know, just the lines that we hear all the time. The minute they go outside of that, Mitch Robinson for one, if that's Mitch Robinson's thoughts and opinions, that's his thoughts and opinion. So, and then Damien Hardwick comes and says, and then all of a sudden, they just get whacked so quickly again. So so then people wonder why you don't hear much from players. You don't hear what their true thoughts and feelings are, because every time they do it, they just get whacked.
No, I 100% agree with you, Rama. I 100% agree with you. And it's like that thing you get at the Royal Melbourne Show, I think. You know the thing when the thing pops up and you get that mallet and you whack the head back down? It's like whenever someone pops their head up and says something, they just get whacked. So, yeah, whack-a-mole. So I just, you know, I mean, again, what Damien Hardwick said yesterday, like he's defending his player. Was it a bit disrespectful? Oh, maybe, but look, I mean, Ox had a go. Damien's had a go back, backing his player. Move on. Like, I just think it's annoying and frustrating, because all it does is encourage vanilla commentary. And a lack of personality, and we bemoan that as well. So you can't have it both ways. It's just such a minor thing that becomes a major, massive thing.
It was interesting. I put out a little poll yesterday on Twitter for the punters to have a bit of a play with, to see, and this is how it was worded, if you were somehow caught up in a conversation about your recent behaviour, which would offend you the least? Because there were some terms that were thrown around through the week for the Tom Lynch situation. The douchebag was mentioned. Mitch Robinson's Sherman Tanker was mentioned. Knucklehead, he's called a knucklehead. And a buffhead were the four terms that came to mind when I thought about the Tom Lynch situation. So I threw it out there in a poll just to see what would happen on Twitter. So douchebag, Sherman Tanker, knucklehead or buffhead, which the term would offend you the least was the question. Buffhead came in as the least offensive term of the quartet at 47% of the 740 votes. Knucklehead was a close second at 33.8%. So buffhead and knucklehead between them are 80% of the population think not very offensive at all. Sherman Tanker and douchebag seemingly were more offensive, with douchebag being the number one most offensive of the quartet. Is that accurate in your world, Ramo? I used to get called buffhead all the time.
Yeah, so do I.
Still
so
do.
So did I. Sherman Tanker's probably, to me, the most offensive. then douchebag. So the other two are almost terms of endearment in from Craig Kelly, my boss.
Yeah, knucklehead and buffhead, they are almost terms of endearment.
Some of the things I get called by my own kids, I can't really get offended by anything, to be honest.
I don't know. Like, this is just, it's Dimmer protecting his son, his family. That's how he sees his team. He's protecting Tom. You know, David Schwartz then commented after Dimmer's remarks, and I don't think David was too offended. He just said, we're big boys, we get on with it. So I made a comment, he made a comment back. That's fair enough. Play on.
Interesting. One of the comments from Dimmer was, don't judge him on one incident. And then he goes and judges David Schwartz on the one incident. That's a bit rich, Dimmer. That's
a bit rich. You can see people now obviously watch Damien Hardwick play his football and how he went about it. But I think people now can see, I've always said, he had the worst white line fever of any player I played with. And I think now people can see when you push Dimmer's buttons, that white line fever comes out.
Yeah, seemingly. I remember him out there with white line fever. He used to punch me up a bit.
Yeah.
There's a text here that says it's not about the Lynch Act. It's the fact that he took his opponent out of the contest, took the uncontested mark and got the goal. This all cost a side a game, you know, in moving forward. Now, again, we've got to remember the full facts of the situation, that Lynch gets Collins, but then Arts gets Collins, and that's the one that saw him go down. I think there was a bit of embellishment from Collins because all of a sudden he just wanted to make it clear that he'd been taken out of the contest, which had seen his opponent take the mark. This is the sort of stuff that happens all the time, and we're not seeing it because we can't go to games. So we're not seeing it on the TV, that the blocking and the stuff that goes on to get the forward free is it's a team offense sort of thing, but the defenders do it just as much.
Yeah.
This is something that happens all the time in the game. And again, I'm not condoning it, but to say that this is an isolated incident, I just don't think is being fair. And there was an incident where Collins did the same thing during the course of the game as well. So we just need footy again. Like, it's
forever.
Just got to this point where, yeah, I know. It's just, I don't know why. There seems to be an anti-Richmond.
I love that from you, Whitey. We just need footy again. We had footy Monday night. It's only Friday.
No, I know, but we need to kick the games again to get on to the next thing. But
yeah, but isn't this what we love?
Be...
Isn't this the part we love? The talk about sort of stuff.
Yeah,
these are the little
subplots
in every game.
Yes, but there does seem to be an anti-Richmond sentiment at the moment. I don't know why. You know, like there's just a few players and incidents that
simple.
Seems to be annoying people. And, it is, because they're so good and they're tall poppies.
Well, they've been, I think at the moment, they've been the most fine team in the competition. So with, you know, just little acts of
there's an edge to them at the moment. And they're absolutely, Raman. They're just getting people offside as well. A, because they're so good. Yep. And then B, because they're playing up and getting fines and all that sort of stuff, which gets fans irate, particularly when it's against their team. So that's why. And then there's been some off-field dramas, of course, which just adds to the storyline. So I'm not surprised that the Richmond are getting a bit of heat. But in fairness, they've had a pretty good run too, just by the way. Everyone's loved them for the last 3 years. They're allowed to cop some heat.
But this country, we've always done it. It's the tall poppy syndrome. We love taking down the tall poppy.
Round 13 of the AFL, and to go through that, we welcome to the program, as always, around about this time on a Friday, the AFL Games record holder, if you don't mind. Brent Harvey is a champion of the competition, certainly a champion of the Kangaroos. He's a champion of the Breakfast Club as well, and he's back with us on a Friday morning. Good morning, Boomer.
And good morning, boys. It's been a pretty good week, actually. I do love my football, but as much as I love my football, I did need that little break in there now. That's revitalised me, and I'm ready to go again tonight. To a new game.
Interesting you say that, because our man Whitey, he was having withdrawal symptoms of of no games. He was starting to get the sweats with a 3-day absence.
That's fake news. That's fake news.
No, you
news.
Said.
I said fake news. You said that.
Oh, no.
You felt
I said
like the games have been
like,
so far. It's like we've had a four-week break again.
I said it feels like it's been 7 months since we played football. That doesn't mean I haven't been missing
sweats.
I just said that it just felt like such a long time since they played, because we're used to it every night. That's all.
There was a game on Monday night, wasn't there?
And
Monday,
feels
Tuesday,
like a long
Wednesday,
time
Thursday, three nights.
Yeah.
No, I do love my footy, Whitey, and I do understand what you're saying, because when you have 20 days of football and 33 games in those 20 days, it does feel like it's been a while. But I actually enjoyed that little break. I'm sure the players would have enjoyed that little break, because there was some short breaks going on there. And I think they'll come back, and hopefully the footy's a little bit better for those guys who've had a little break.
You're a meticulous planner and preparer, Boomer, through your time. It's the reason you got through so many games. When you go through a period of time like they've gone through in recent times, we were discussing this earlier this morning, of 5 or 6 weeks where it was really jam-packed and they've had to play and basically recover before they play again without much training in their middle. Now that there's been that window, would you expect maybe some players to be, and this sounds silly in my head when I ask it, but I'm going to ask it, that actually be a bit sore because they've had time to get sore through training?
Yeah, I don't think the loads at training would be super high, Huff. we've got to remember that these guys have played jam-packed football. And, you know, I'll touch on the Gold Coast later on, but their breaks have been absolutely ridiculous. A 4, a 6, a 5, and a 4-day break. It's absolutely amazing. So if they do get a 6-day period where there's no game, or an 8-day period where there's no game, the focus will certainly be recovery. So I don't think they'll come back any sorer. There'll certainly be some sore boys, but the whole focus will be around recovery. They're certainly not going to get any fitter this time of the year. So I'm tipping they didn't go out and do any time trials or match sim or anything like that. So recovery would have been the main focus. So I expect, look, there's a massive advantage for the break. The buys have gone over like a 5-week period or something, hasn't it? Or a 4-week period. There's massive advantages. So Carlton have just come off a bye, so to speak. Gold Coast still haven't had their bye. That's a huge advantage. And again, we'll touch on that when we talk about tonight's game, but that is a huge advantage this time of year.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point. We're also discussing the 1938 grand final this morning, Boomer, which I'm sure you're across.
1938, can you...
Carlton defeated Collingwood by 15 points. Carlton by 15 points over the Magpies. 96,000 at the G. It was a great day. Well, we're talking about one of the questions off the SMS was there a pressure player, a forward pressure player in the Carlton lineup that day? And Ramo was talking about the roles of players these days, and perhaps sometimes they're not really required to do too much rather than just pressure players and do bugger all else. They run 15 Ks for 3 possessions, is what he says. Your last year at the Kangaroos, what was your role?
I wasn't a pressure player. No. I kicked 36 goals, Daniel. I wasn't a pressure player. I hope you weren't alluding to that.
I was just asking a question, just about roles.
What was my role? My role in my last year was exactly the same as the year before, the year before, and the year before. I was playing as a fifth-on baller, so I would start as a half-forward. Most of the times I'd get a player that wouldn't leave my sight, so I'll take him into the midfield, clear the forward 50 open and only play with 5 forwards and become pretty much an extra midfielder and have a licence pretty much to go wherever I want. Hence, when I was a little bit tired, I could rest forward up in the goal square maybe, or get back up on the ball when I needed to. So I had I actually loved my role. I say it's the best role in football, being able to do pretty much what you want. And I guess that comes with, if you do get tagged or you get a halfback that plays super tight on you, which they don't do very much these days, you can manipulate where you want to start and you do get a slight advantage over the opposition.
So you kicked 36 and got the boot, did you?
Yeah. We're going to have to talk about that again, do we?
We did it last week, so we may as well do it again this week.
Let's touch on it for 30 seconds every time I'm on. That would be great.
It's good fun. It's good fun because it's not us. We sort of do because Ken McCarthy's walked away. He's told he's not getting another contract, and he said, up your jumper, in your boot, I'm out from Fremantle. You're in a similar position, and you obviously kept playing. How difficult was that? I mean, you were the game's record holder at the time, of course.
Okay, I didn't know about Cam McCarthy there. That's news to me right there. I guess when you think you've still got football left in you, it's really hard to swallow. I think I said it last week, you know, people tend to think about the 1 year that I didn't play. I'd like to think about the 21 years that I did play. That's the way I look at it. But when you're a little bit younger, I was 38. Years old. People did have an argument and say, you know, it's probably time to move on, you old fella. Cam McCarthy, how old's Cam? He would be 20...
Mid-20s. He's mid-20s.
Yeah, 27, I think he might be. So that's a hard pill to swallow, especially when you've had a few injuries, a few ups and downs in your career, and you think you've got a lot of football to go. Of course he's going to say, I'm ready to go, and hopefully another club picks him up. But he's played some really good football. We haven't seen it enough, no doubt. But he's played some really good football.
At GWS 1 year, Boomer. At GWS 1 year, Cam was leading the Coleman medal for, I reckon, till about halfway through the year, Whitey, if I'm not mistaken. He started like a house on fire 1 year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously, Cam's had some personal issues, but he was, you know, he burst onto the scene as one of the most natural forwards we've seen in a long time. Started, obviously, at the Giants and went across to Fremantle. He just hasn't been the player we all thought he potentially could be because of the problems that he's had. But, I mean, I don't know, but I reckon there'd be potentially a team that would have another crack at him.
25 years.
25. Thanks, Joey. You've got to You've got to remember here, guys, the grass is not always green. I'm not just talking about Cam McCarthy here. So he leaves GWS, right, and you have got Finlayson, Himmelberg, Jeremy Cameron. If he plays in that forward line right now, he's probably the fourth forward. He gets the fourth best defender, and all of a sudden he can kick two or three without, you know, being a superstar. He goes to Fremantle. Jesse Hogan wasn't there. He's an undersized full forward. He gets the best defender every week, and he needed to kick three or four goals because he's gone over on a decent contract. So the grass is not always greener on the other side, and players have to realise that just by leaving and maybe taking more money somewhere else for two or three years. It doesn't work out exactly perfect every single time. Again, I'm not talking about Cam McCarthy in particular, but yep, that certainly looks like what's happened. So imagine if he was at GWS and being the fourth best forward there now and getting the fourth best defender. You end up having a decent year.
Absolutely. But you talk about, you know, the temptation with Cam McCarthy. You only have to go back to last year when he had a little bit of a renaissance. He kicked five goals in the opening game against North Melbourne, then kicked two, one, two, and then all of a sudden disappeared again. And then came back in round 15 and kicked four against Carlton off a six-week break. So, you know, the talent's there. He kicked 19 goals last season from about 10 games. So it's not a question of whether he can play. It's a question of whether he can commit to playing and being the consistent player. Now, maybe at 25, you know, we know what we're going to get with him, and it's not worth the risk. But I reckon people would look at it and go, oh, gee, I wouldn't mind having a go.
I think a number of clubs will be doing their homework on Cam McCarthy.
Who does he fit, Rammer? Which teams off the top of your head do you think he would fit?
Oh. Wasn't the home factor one of the major reasons he took off? So he's pretty limited. Yeah. Anyone left?
Well, he left and played in the... Didn't he play in the... Oh, no, he wasn't allowed to play in the Waffle, but he left and had a year off because the contract and the negotiation didn't work exactly how they wanted it to work. So he had 12 months off football before he came back and played.
Well, he was still on GWS's list.
Yes, that's right.
Yes, and then because they didn't release him that previous year, so he went home. And then was the trade happened. So I'm just trying to think top of my head who comes to mind really quickly for who needs a forward. Essendon need a forward, huh?
Everybody.
Yeah.
Collingwood probably need a forward too, don't they, at the minute? That's what people are throwing around, a medium-sized tall forward.
I think Cam's manager will be getting some phone calls over the coming weeks.
Did you know that Boomer in his last year kicked 36 goals? He didn't miss a game. He kicked six in one game against Melbourne. He had two other games where he kicked four. As I said, didn't miss a game. Almost was all Australian and didn't play the next year.
Did he miss a game?
Did I come fifth in the best and fairest, Whitey? Did you say that? No, you didn't. Sorry.
What about his role, mate? Just go and do what you want, Boomer.
Just do your role, mate. Just do your job.
And I did have someone with their bloody hand in my back pocket the whole game too. I was still getting tagged. I'm telling you, at 38, on a number of occasions, half, I'll turn around and say, mate, come on, I'm 38 years old. I'm not to be your old man. Leave me alone.
I thought you were going to go say something else then. You cleaned that up nicely.
Yeah, I was, and I just had to change it. Realised I was on radio.
Let's have a look at tonight's game for round 13. We'll move on from that magnificent career of yours, Boomer, and have a look at the Gold Coast and Carlton affair tonight at TIO Stadium in Darwin as part of this Sir Doug Nicholls Indigenous round, which is fantastic. Swallow and Harbour are come back in after being rested by the Lemons for the Gold Coast Suns. Sexton, Fiorini and Holman are out. David Swallow plays game number 150. And for the Blues, Jack Martin and Mark Pitnett come in for Josh Honey, who is out, in and out after his first game, and Matthew Kennedy, who's injured as well. The Blues somehow found a win last week, Boomer, against Freo with that dramatic after the siren kick. And Gold Coast just ran out of gas against the Tigers on Monday night. What's going to happen here?
Sexton's out big for me, guys. I think he's an underrated player, and we know that he's kicked little bags here and there. Gold Coast haven't scored
twice.
He got dropped. Sexton got dropped.
Yep.
Twice.
Wow. That's big because he's a decent player. He's a good goal kicker.
He's a goal kicker.
We've seen him kick a couple of small little bags. Gold Coast have struggled really to score, especially last week. They kicked 32 points last week. I know they had a couple of weeks of 70-odd there, but before that it was 35 and 46. So to take one of your major goal contributors out is a fairly big call. They are coming off, guys, and I spoke about they're off a four-day break this week, but previous to that they had a five-day break, a six-day break, and a four-day break before that again without having a bye. So I watched the game last week against Richmond, and they just fell off in the last quarter. You could see they were running on treadmills. I thought that they really caught up with them. If that happened last week with a four-day break, I can only imagine it's going to happen again in the second half this week. I enjoy watching them play. I think they moved the ball super well. Last week they had one mark inside 50. And to 14, I think it was, to Richmond. I know Richmond have got some big boys down there in Riewoldt and Lynch. But Gold Coast have got Lynch and Day, and they're just probably not getting their hands on the ball enough for me. So that forward target probably needs to take a little bit more marks. And 29 inside 50s, guys, last week against Richmond. I know they defend pretty well, but you're not going to win too many games, hence why they only scored 32 points. I like what I'm seeing with Carlton. I know they've had a lot of close games, and some people will say it's lucky that they've got over the line in a couple of them. But last week, that goal by Nunes was unbelievable. He didn't look fazed. He went back. He didn't rush it, but he was quick, and he just went bang. And what a kick from that pocket! The ball came back beautifully. So I'm liking what I'm seeing with the Blues. I still don't think that their forwards, in terms of their talls and their smalls, have really gelled together. We haven't seen a heap out of Betts. Jack Martin comes back into the team, and did you say he was back in half?
Yes. Martin? Yeah, Jack's in.
Yeah. So Martin comes back into the team. Fisher was good a couple of weeks ago, but didn't kick a goal last week. Gibbons has found a bit of the ball, but probably not kicking enough goals for me. And McKay and Casbolt, I just don't think they've gelled as a forward unit yet. And when they do, they can be a lot more potent than they actually have been. But I'm loving what they're doing off half-back, running the ball through the corridor, taking a few more risks. And we've seen all this without their best player in Cripps absolutely dominating. Yes, he's been a good player and contributing every single week, but he's certainly not dominating. And that's the even spread that Carlton need to be a very good player, very good team for me.
Is it a bridge too far, Rama?
For Gold Coast?
For Gold Coast, yeah, sorry.
Well, the positive for Gold Coast is their percentage still. They're still ahead of the ledger there. They're 100.9 in terms of a percentage for the season. So they're definitely defending well, but they just can't get over the line with those wins. And the other positive, their average age still is only 22 that they're putting out there most weeks. So that's the real point. But in previous seasons, Whitey, what we've seen with Gold Coast is this time of the year, they start to get some heavy losses because those younger players start to get really tired and the effort is just simply not there. So I want to see Gold Coast really at the finish. I want to see him finish this season with some real energy because I think they've made some really big strides. Now, the importance of finishing off a season and going into a pre-season with some sort of momentum becomes really, really important. I think we know the talents there. You know, you look at Ben King and Rankin up one end of the ground. I love Sam Collins at the other end of the ground. I love seeing the reaction of Sam Collins last week after the loss to Richmond in the Roos when he was, you know, hitting the poles and all that sort of stuff, just showing the care. Obviously, we know Matty Rowley is going to be a star for the Giants, but Tuke Miller's just had an absolute sensational season for the Suns. David Swallow's got back to the form that we know he can play. So I think for Gold Coast, the mechanics are there. It's just if they can continue to add to this team, whether it's more through the draft or they can start to now appeal to players to come and play for them. Carlton, on the other hand, they look now settled a bit, Whitey. Their back six looks really settled. Cade Simpson, if they go on with him next year, he's been absolutely terrific for their leadership. But Williamson, Doherty now, Jones, Wietering, Plowman, it looks pretty settled. And I haven't even thrown Marchbank in there. We haven't seen Marchbank this year. So they're going to have seven, that back seven, which most teams go with now, that looks very good. Their forwards still, I'm with Boomer, their forwards still concern me because of the inconsistencies, but it's hard to get a real read on them without Charlie Curnow and without Mitch McGovern playing long stretches because those two guys probably play most weeks. So And the Blues need another midfielder. They need another midfielder to continue to help Cripps. Mark Murphy can't continue to do it forever. He'll eventually go and play in a half forward flank. So this is a tricky little game to select, because with the Suns coming off a 4-day break, Whitey, they played on Monday against the Tigers, and then obviously the Blues travelling from Perth, where they played on the Saturday night. You know, the way these players come up, and it's going to be hot. We know it's going to be really, really hot in Darwin. It's a tricky game to select.
Yes, there's not much more I can add. Very comprehensive there, Rama. What I will say is that I'm with Boomer. The Suns look tired against Richmond, and I've talked about this with Half during the week. And I just think, having looked tired on Monday night, to then have to back up again and play in warm conditions in Darwin only 4 days later, I think that's going to be a big impact on this game. I think if both teams had the equal rest, and maybe if it was at Metricon, I'd probably be with the Suns. But I think under the circumstances of Gold Coast preparation, I'm with Carlton. And I do like what Carlton's doing. I do agree with you, Rammer. I think they're finally starting to settle into what the future's going to look like.
33 degrees today in the Northern Territory, mostly sunny.
33, right.
It's today.
It's a bizarre situation that we find ourselves in. The Gold Coast finished the round of the last game on the Monday night, and they played the first game the following week on a Thursday night. I found that when I was looking at the fixture, I thought I must have skipped the week. So I kept going back and having a look, but I wasn't wrong. And 4 days later, they're backing up. And like I did mention before, guys, a big tipping point for me is that Carlton's had their bye 2 weeks ago and Gold Coast still haven't had their bye.
Well, this is on really Wednesday, important. Monday, Friday.
This is really important for the Suns, because this is obviously the first time they've played in Darwin, but they've got now part of their academy, which takes in the Darwin area. So it's really important that the Suns get a good foothold in that area and get some support there.
Important for the Blues as well. Their finals tilt is still on the line with this game, so it's going to be big for them. Who's tipping the Gold Coast? Anyone?
No. I'm going to go with the Blues this week.
We're all on the Blues in that one. Let's have a look at Melbourne and the Bulldogs. 10-8 on the ladder. Well, Bulldogs v. Melbourne officially is. Doggies back on the winner's list last week against the Crows, the hapless Crows. And the Ds, we know, are on fire. Three in a row. Kangaroos and Crows form wasn't strong, but then they smacked the Pies last week, and they've had some injury concerns, as we know. They talk about games for finals. Couldn't get much bigger for these two teams, could it, Rimmer?
No, absolutely not. And if you think about this game, you've got Melbourne sitting in 8th and the Bulldogs sitting in 10th. But if you think about it and you go, well, who's actually going better? They're both 3-2 in their last 5 games. I would still probably say the Bulldogs that I think are going better. Now, the Bulldogs absolutely crushed Adelaide last Sunday, I think that game was.
Yep.
And Melbourne, obviously, a really easy win against Collingwood in the end. So the form lines of these two clubs are really interesting. This is a battle of the midfield. You look at the dominance of the Bulldogs midfield last week against the Crows, and then you look at how reliant Melbourne are on their midfield. But I think if the Bulldogs can really get that advantage in the ruck, obviously, Bruce going down during the week, unlikely to play. I'm not sure if Max Gorn's going to be there. Luke Jackson's not going to be there. It's probably going to be Tom McDonald that's going to have to ruck for the majority of the game for the Ds against Tim English. So if the Dogs can dominate around that clearance, stoppage, contested ball area, we saw Norton come back and kick 5 or 6 on the weekend. Given those opportunities to the Dogs forwards, I'm just with the Dogs.
Yeah, to me, the Dogs' midfield probably has a little bit more depth than Melbourne's, particularly with Lachie Hunter coming back into the team and Josh Dunkley in recent weeks. It's almost, if not it is, full strength. And I think that might be the difference in this game, but it's hard to tell. There's not much in it between these two sides, and there's probably only one, if not no, spots left in the 8 for these two teams. So it's a massive game, and it's the one I'm looking forward to the most, just to see, because both teams have been able to get their confidence back by playing against weak opposition. Now they come up against each other.
Boomer, any take on this?
Yeah, it's a massive game. I think the old 8-point game, the saying comes back into it half. They're both on 24 points. Melbourne have won their last 3 in a row. I know they have beat the Crows and North Melbourne in that three, last and second last on the ladder, but they won convincingly last week against Collingwood. They look like they're just starting to get their mojo and actually playing some decent football. And the Bulldogs, on the other hand, have been that little bit inconsistent, that hard team to tip for me. I'm putting them in the Hawthorn bracket and the Essendon bracket at the minute because they're really hard to tip. But I do agree with what Whitey says. Dunkley come back. He just finds the football. He has 25 to 30 every single week. And Hunter is a massive inclusion for him. So I do think they bat a little bit deeper through the midfield as well. They're getting back to throwing that ball around like they did in 2016. And I think if they play to their best, they can beat Melbourne this week.
All right. So let's get the tips before we get to the break. Whitey, who are you tipping?
Bulldogs just.
Rammer, you're on the Dogs?
Yeah, Dogs.
Boomer?
Yeah, I'm on the Dogs as well.
I'm on the D train. I'm riding them all the way through at the 550 for you blokes. I'm riding them all the way through for you. We're going to get into the finals and help the punters out there on the Breakfast Club. The game's tomorrow at Port Adelaide and Hawthorn. We haven't spoken about, boys. So just quick tips here. Boomer, Port Adelaide and Hawthorn?
I'm going to go with Port Adelaide.
Rammer and Whitey, we'll go that order from now on. Rammer?
Port Adelaide.
Port. I'm going for Port Adelaide as well. Essendon, Richmond, we buggered that up. Boomer?
Who are we going? Richmond. Port Adelaide and Richmond.
Essendon, what? Richmond.
Essendon, Richmond. No, I can't pick Essendon at the minute.
Yeah, fair enough.
Tigers, Richmond. But it wouldn't surprise me if Essendon win.
Richmond by 150. Fremantle, Sydney, Boomer?
Oh, good game. Where's this one at, Daniel?
That's at Optus Stadium.
Optus. Yeah, I'm going to go with Fremantle just because it's a home game.
Freo from me as well. Adelaide Geelong at the Adelaide Oval. Anyone tipping the Crows?
No.
No.
Wouldn't have thought so. Brisbane and St Kilda's a beauty at the Gabba on Sunday.
Ooh, good game. This will really test the Saints to see if they're actually up to playing some finals football. I think Brisbane are going okay. I'm going to go with Brisbane.
I'm going to tip the Saints. I'm going to tip the Saints in this one.
Brisbane for me in that one. Rama's going solo there, Rogue. West Coast and the Giants at Optus Stadium.
Ooh. West Coast.
Ooh. West Coast.
West Coast.
Giants.
Oh, Rammer. Rogue. And Collingwood North on Monday night.
Kangas. Collingwood. Kangas win that easy.
All right. Rammer.
Pies.
Collingwood for me on that one as well.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.